happy Monday to you. Welcome back to the DriveCast. My name is Dean. I'm the lead pastor here at LifePoint. I do the majority of teaching at our Lewis Center campus. And this past week, we jumped back into our Uncommon Crown series. And the whole idea really behind the series is that all of us, whether you're a Christian or you're not a Christian, seems like all of us are very comfortable with the baby Jesus. But when he grows up and he says things like, take up your cross and follow me, or to find your life, you have to lose your life, that seems to change things. And Jesus didn't come into the world to say he was a king. He said he was the king. And if he's the king, that means that I have to answer the question, is he my king? And if I say that he's my king, what are the implications for his reign in my life? Those are all things that we have to answer. And so this past week, in looking at the Christmas story, we talked about that big idea that Jesus comes to establish his kingdom, not an earthly kingdom like we think about kingdoms, but rather he came to establish his kingdom in our hearts. And we looked at the story that is often told around Christmas about the wise men. And I kind of feel like I ruined everyone's nativity scenes on Sunday, because I said, well, there may have been more than three wise men, because the Bible never says there was just three. And so, you know, that's going to throw a little wrench in things. And then you realize that the language that's used in Matthew chapter 2 by Herod and the wise men is child, not the word for infant. So the wise men could have not even been at the birth altogether. They could have been in, come to see Jesus anytime in the first 2 years. So you realize that maybe it changes our traditional view of Christmas. Interestingly enough to me, as I studied this week, I found that Syriac Christians have always celebrated 12 wise men. So, like I said, you may have to add a few to the nativity scene. But one thing that we do learn is that whenever they show up in Bethlehem, because they follow the star to get there, Herod is upset. They ask a question: where is he who was born king of the Jews? That's the one thing Herod could not do. He couldn't be born king. He was an Edomite. So the Hebrews never received him because he wasn't fully Jewish. He built them cities. He built them a temple. He built them palaces and theaters, and the people never received him. They viewed Herod as a Roman leader. Remember, Herod is a title, not a name, but they viewed Herod the Great as a Roman leader. So because of that, they never embraced him. Herod, he was incredibly insecure. As a matter of fact, on his deathbed, he had 200 plus very popular people in Jerusalem who are Hebrew all gathered up, put them into an arena, and had them held there so that on the day of his death, he wanted them all killed so that people would actually mourn on the day that he died. And so one of the things I said at Lewis Center is that Christmas is both the beginning of trouble and it's the end of trouble. And what I mean by that, I share this quote by J.C. Ryle that says, there's just this vast quantity of religion in the world. Those who are married in Christian ceremonies and who die with Christian funerals, but, and check this part, there is no fight about their Christianity. The two great marks of a Christian is that they possess both an inner warfare and an inner peace. In other words, what Ryle is saying is you're not fighting for peace, you are fighting from peace. So because you have made peace with God, you are willing to fight for peace with others in the world. And so what does that look like? We talked about how we fight for peace in our marriages. We talked about how we fight for peace in the young people that we mentor, whether those are in our families or coaches or students. Ryle asks a great question there. Where is the fight in your Christianity? What are the things in your life that you're willing to fight for? And for Herod, instead of searching and seeking out the meaning of what God was doing in his plan, he immediately defaults to self-preservation and self-promotion. So if you're wondering, well, how did they know to follow the star? The last prophet that they listened to before they left the exile was Micah. In Micah 5:2, he says, but you, O Bethlehem Ephratah, who are too little to be among the clans of Judah, from you shall come forth for me the one who is to be ruler in Israel, the one who is coming forth from old, from ancient of days. And so Micah's telling them, hey, the Messiah is coming. Then you have people who are in captivity, like Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who are taken into captivity, who are planting the seeds. And this is hundreds and hundreds of years before Jesus is ever going to come back. And so it makes sense then that the teaching comes about that God's going to bring salvation in the east through a star. Excuse me, for them, they came from the east, would have been in the west through a star. Bible scholar Ray Vanderlaan says that in 44 BC, whenever Julius Caesar was murdered by Cassius and Brutus, that during his funeral, a comet appeared. And actually, today we look back now, we're able to time it and realize it was a supernova that appeared in the sky. And that was just prior, right, to his adoption of his son Augustus. So the legend became that signs in the sky accompany the birth of great leaders. Now, why am I saying all that? All that to say that there's actually evidence that these magi, these wise men, would have followed the star and come from the east. Why did God have them bring gifts, gold, frankincense, and myrrh? Well, because Herod is going to, he's going to commit a mass genocide. He's going to murder, or at least attempt to murder, all of the two-year-old male children in and around the region of Bethlehem to eliminate this coming king. So what do Mary and Joseph need? If they're going to make this trip down to Egypt, what do they need? They need money, and they don't even have enough money, right, to bribe the innkeeper, you know, to find a good spot where they could be in Bethlehem. But when the wise men bring them gold, frankincense, and myrrh, now they have the resources that they need to make it down to Egypt. And I said all that to say this to you, that God always has a plan for his people. God has a plan before the chaos, in the chaos, and after the chaos. The uncommon crown rests on the head of an uncommon king. He's Emmanuel, God with us. Not God disappointed in us, not God indifferent towards us. He is with us, and he is with us because he wants to be with us. We don't have to take a ticket and wait to see him like he's busy, like when we go to the BMV. We don't have to go through security to see him, where you have to get checked out and measure up to certain standards. You don't have to raise your voice to get his attention to notice you. In your weakness, in your smallness, your failure, your shame, he cannot wait to be with you. You know, there were mornings sometimes, maybe like on a Sunday morning, when you try to wake up a teenager to go to church, or maybe to get them up to go to school, right? You got to drag them out of bed. That is not God's approach to his people. God is like a kid jumping out of bed, spring loaded on Christmas morning, to come to us, to be with us. And that's why during this series, we're singing the song, No Other King. There's a great line right at the beginning of that song that says, no other king would kneel to wash our feet, prepare a table for his enemies, lay down his glory for the least of these. No other king would touch a leper's skin, open his arm to let the outcast in, respond with mercy in the face of sin. But that is our king. I'm going to pray that into our day today, and then I'm going to give you the opportunity to pray. God, thank you that Christmas, the story, teaches us about our stories, that you've always had a plan for our lives. You're in it before the chaos, you're with us during the chaos, and you're still working a plan for your glory after the chaos. I pray, God, for folks who are listening today, maybe who are going through something incredibly difficult, maybe they've got some chaos in their lives right now. God, I pray that you would be with them today, that they would know your nearness to them as their good, that God, maybe in some unusual ways, you would show yourself to them. Now you take the opportunity to pray.